The young woman who hurried down Fifth Avenue was unaware of the stairs as she plunged determinedly through the downpour as though oblivious to it. She was, in fact, too consumed by her thoughts to notice passers-by. They noticed her. They stared, nodded approvingly, or smiled with admiration. She drew attention for a number of reasons. She was rather exotic-looking, with high cheekbones, black eyebrows beautifully arched on her broad brow above large dark eyes. Her jet-black hair was pulled back into a sleek ponytail which fell almost to her waist. Though not beautiful in the classical sense, she was arresting and had a unique look about her. Tall, slender, lithe, she moved with grace and had an inbred elegance. Her clothes were simple. She was wearing a sleeveless black cotton shift and ballet slippers, her only jewellery, large pearl earrings and a watch. She carried a battered old black Hermès Kelly bag, well polished, which had obviously seen better days, but looked just right on her arm. The rain was coming down in torrents, and she was already drenched, but she no longer bothered to look for a cab. There was no point, they were all taken. She was heading home, and much to her relief, she wasn't very far now. 2 blocks down, 3 avenues to cross, and she would be at West 22nd Street and 9th Avenue. A month ago, through her only friend in New York, a young man called Dax, she had found the perfect place. A comfortable room with 2 good-sized closets and its own bath, in a brownstone on this rather lovely old street. Chelsea reminded her of London, gave her a sense of well-being, and she felt at home there. When she had left London, she had left behind her name. Now she was known as M, and M did not mind the rain today. It was cooling on this blistering August afternoon. Earlier, around lunchtime, it had been at least 101 in the shade. Lenny, the young receptionist at the Blaine Model Agency, had announced with a big grin, "Betcha we could fry eggs on the sidewalk today, Em. How about giving it a try?" Em had laughed with her, wanting to be nice. Lenny had endeavoured to be helpful since the day they had met. Em had gone to Blaine's within days of arriving in Manhattan, 2 months ago now. Glancing at her watch, M winced. It was already 4 o'clock, 9 at night in London, and she usually called her sister on Fridays around this time. The brownstone was on 22nd, halfway between 9th and 10th, and as she drew closer, she saw somebody huddled on the top step, leaning against the front door. At once, she realized it was her friend, Dax. Dressed in jeans and a T-shirt, he was protecting himself with a newspaper, which he held over his head. He was as drenched as she was, and the minute she ran up the steps, she saw he was shivering, looking pale and pinched. "Dax, what are you doing here?" she exclaimed, pulling the door key out of her bag. "Getting decidedly wet," he shot back, grinning at her. "So I see. Let's get you inside. You're shivering. Are you sick?"
"I've got a bit of a cold," he answered. "That's all."
And standing up, he followed her inside. The two of them stood dripping water in the tiled entrance for a moment until M took hold of his arm and led him into the small cloakroom, reminding him that Gio, from whom she rented her room, insisted her house be kept pristine.
"Get undressed in here and dry yourself, Dax. There's towels in the cupboard next to the coat rack. I'll be back with something dry for you in a minute."
"Thanks," he answered, still shivering, offering her a wan smile. M went out, took off her wet ballet shoes, and ran upstairs to her room. Within seconds, she had shed her soaking dress and underwear, thrown them in the tub, rubbed herself dry, and put on cotton pants, a cotton T-shirt, and dry shoes. Taking a large terry cloth robe out of the closet, she went downstairs, knocked on the door of the cloakroom, and when it opened, put the robe over Dax's outstretched arm.
"That should fit you, Dax. You'll find me in the kitchen. I'm going to make us a pot of really hot tea."
"The English cure-all for everything," he muttered.
"Don't knock it," Em said, hurrying into the kitchen.
Once the kettle was on the stove, she pulled her cell phone out of her pants pocket and dialed her sister in London.
"Hi, it's me," she exclaimed when the phone was answered. "I'm alive and well and kicking. How are you, birdie?" "I'm fine, darling. Very okay this week. And listen to me. You know I hate that nickname you gave me when we were little. Let's forget it, shall we?"
Hearing the laughter in her voice, Em chuckled, then went on,
How's business? Has everything been going well? Yes, it has. And I heard from Mummy and Dad. They send their love. So does Gran.
How is Gran? Is she feeling better?
Loads, yes. And I'm sure it's because Mummy and Dad are in Australia. You know how our mother cheers everyone up, makes them instantly feel better. And Gran's no exception. She responds immediately to her much-loved daughter.
I'm glad to hear Gran's better. I'll give her a call over the weekend. Any other news?
Not really.
The sisters talked for a few minutes longer, then said their goodbyes. Putting her cell phone on the countertop, Em opened the cupboard and took out her large brown teapot, which she had bought when she moved into the brownstone. After putting 6 English breakfast tea bags into the pot, she poured the boiling water over them. Her thoughts remained with her sister. She was concerned about her constantly now that she was on her own. A widow. Tragically, her husband had died of a heart attack 2 years ago, and Em was well aware she was still grieving. But that was natural. They had been so very much in love, joined at the hip, to Em's way of thinking. Then, suddenly, he was gone. Just like that, in the flicker of an eyelash. He had been only 33. Far too young.